Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Lori Davis, and you're listening to The Lori Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio. And today we're launching our very first episode of Native Talk. And I chose the topic of the residential school system, something I have come to not know because I never, ever had that experience. However, I have embraced whatever information I can and talked to lots and lots of people about this situation. I, for one, was completely oblivious growing up in this country of Canada to the fact that there was another completely separate educational system. So today I want the show to be factual, educational. Our call-in number, if you want to call us, is 515-602-9660. We are broadcasting live for the next hour. You can call in. We can talk. I have lots of information that I can share. And I just want to start that ball rolling because the more we know, the better we can behave. In other words, we fear that which we don't know anything about. So in my journey in the last 23 years, working on and off reserves in North America, north, south, east, and west coasts, I have just been able to embrace so many beautiful people who know the history, don't know the history, have had the experience. And my very first exposure to the residential school system was through a book that I picked up called Of the Depths. And this book was written in 1992 by the beautiful Isabel Knockwood from Nova Scotia, whom has passed away a short while back. And when I saw the book, I thought, what's this? Well, what's this? Now, here's the interesting thing. I'm from Nova Scotia. My dad grew up in Stewiacke, Nova Scotia. I personally went to school there myself. 10 miles down the road, there's a residential school in Shubenacadie, Indian Brook, Nova Scotia, that I didn't even know anything about. How does that happen? And I have talked to so many people who have absolutely no idea about the history of the residential school system. So if you're out there and you know anything, please phone me at 515-602-9660. Because I'm not going to presume that I know anything. I have not had the experience. I just have those people who can talk to me and have educated me and shared with me to learn more. So that's our topic for discussion today. So I'll bring us up to speed. 2 years ago in January, it'll be 2 years ago, I was completely honored to have been invited to speak at the very first National Residential School Reconciliation Conference, which was held in Winnipeg, Canada. And I was invited to be a workshop leader and bring the topic of self-worth to the conference. Well, little did I know what was going to happen to me there. So I'm going to start off with the story because it's quite pleasant and cute and painful at the same time. So the conference was set up at the hotel, and there were lots and lots of people there, and lots of elders there. And of course, the Honorable Murray Sinclair was there. He was our guest speaker. And there were lots of great speakers. And around the ballroom, if you can picture this, around the ballroom were these beautiful big, they weren't beautiful. The information wasn't beautiful, but the banners were very professional. And it was a timeline history of the residential school system in Canada. So I was walking around, looking at the banners, reading the information, taking notes, writing things down, learning. And I walked up to this one banner, and here was this little gentleman. He was small, probably in his 80s, an elder. And I just introduced myself to him, and I said, you're attending the conference? Yes. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm going to be delivering a workshop tomorrow. And he asked me for the name of it. And what was really fun about him, he had on a Toronto Maple Leafs shirt, like a sweater, with the big Toronto Maple Leaf in the front. And I said, my gosh, you can't be a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. And he said, I sure am. Even though he said the last time they won a Stanley Cup, there were dinosaurs here. And we both chuckled over that. And he was reading the banner, which had information about the school where he attended. I had absolutely no idea how this man was going to be impacting my life. So we said our hellos and small talk, and I walked away. And the last thing he looked at me and he said, I think I'll come to your workshop tomorrow. I said, that would be amazing. I would love it. So the next day, I'm in my room to do my workshop. It's packed because my workshop is about, not only was the land taken, not only was the language stolen and refused, not allowed to speak your own language. Can you imagine? Spirituality practices, ceremonies, traditions, everything that our Indigenous people knew gradually disappeared. And it took 125 years of an attempt to make that happen. And thank God, it's still not successful. But anyway, back to my story. So I'm in the ballroom, in my little ballroom where I'm going to do my workshop. And in walks my little elder, still wearing his Toronto Maple Leaf shirt. And he waved to me from the back of the room, and he sat at the back of the room. So I like interaction, so I'm into the workshop. And about 15 minutes later, I ask if there are any people in the room that would like to come up and just share a little bit about who they are, the community they're from, and maybe a little connection to their experience in the residential school system. And who should pop up to the front of the room but Mr. Toronto Maple Leaf himself? And, oh, I was so thrilled. So everybody shares a little bit, and he's the last person to hold the microphone. And he's very fun, and he's a little twinkle in his eye. And I gave him the microphone, and I stepped to the side of the room, and he started talking. And honestly, I couldn't get the mic out of his hand. He started, and he talked, and he chatted. And then he dropped the mic down to the side of himself and looked over at me, and he sort of gave me a little, darn you, Lori Davis. How is this happening? Darn you. And I said, what? What's going on? And he put the mic back up to his mouth, and he said, I am about to share something I have never told another living soul in my whole entire life. And this man was getting ready to share it all within a room. There were probably 120 people there. How scary would that be? Anyway, the tears started coming, and I just encouraged him. I said, just go ahead. And everybody in the room, he knew he was safe there. They were all listening. And he started. And he said, I forget which school it was now. But anyway, he was there for probably 8 years. And he said, I was a sickly child. I was sick a lot. So I spent a lot of time in the infirmary. And then he paused and he hesitated and he started crying. And he said, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm going to do it. I should have done it years ago. And he broke down. And he said, every time I went to that infirmary, I was molested by the female nurse on duty. And everybody, you could hear a pin drop in the room, and everybody was like, whoa. And he said, I never told a soul until now. I have been carrying that my whole life. So I went over because he was now, he had told the story, so he's done. I went over. I gave him a big hug. He was just a little tiny guy. And he put his head on my shoulder and he started crying profusely. And then other people started to come up. And then we all sort of settled down. And he still wasn't finished talking. He said, I still have some things to say. So there was a knock at the door. And I thought, an interruption. Who's this? So my assistant at the time, she let them in. It was the movie crew. They were coming in and they were filming little clips of all the workshops because they were going to put a video together. And when my elder saw that camera coming down the aisle, he picked that mic up and he told the whole story all over again. And that film crew was in my workshop space for a half an hour. They didn't leave. And that was the most amazing experience, not only for him, but for me and for all of the people in the room that day. I know they will never forget it. And then, of course, what that did, it allowed other people to be vulnerable and come up and share. My challenge with this particular topic, it's really hard to find people who want to talk about it because it's so painful. And if you don't know anything about the residential school system, you need to do some research. Get into YouTube. There's lots of videos now and stories, not stories, facts. These are facts. This actually took place. And part of the problem was we didn't even know that it was even going on. How crazy is that? So that's our topic for today. Thank you for listening to that, a most amazing experience that I had. And like I said, I'm not so arrogant as to assume I know anything about how this must have felt or how this was or not even being a part of that. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we cannot educate ourselves and figure some stuff out and how to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem. Part of the problem is difficult to understand how something that took place over a span of 125 years can still be impacting a brand new baby that was born today in any of our indigenous communities. But it is and will be until we change it. We cannot change what has happened to us. Has anybody ever had that experience? I can't change one thing that has happened to me. I had a little sister pass away. I was only 6 at the time. I can't change that. Did it impact me for the rest of my life? Absolutely. I wonder what she would be like. I wonder if she would have had a family. I wonder. And if we've had tragedies, we can't change that. There's nothing from the past we can change. It's fact. It happened. And it's very difficult to unsee what you have seen or undo what you have experienced. And so it has taken years and years and years for even the healing to start because nobody wanted to talk about it. So if you're out there, and I want to put about a big shout out thank you to all of my Indigenous community friends, people who don't even know me, 5.3 thousand people know about the show today. That is the biggest audience, the biggest number of hits or views that I've ever received for anything that I've ever done on the air in the last 23 years. So a big shout out, thank you to the communities who put the message out. Even if people are not calling in, I know you're there. And I know this won't be the only time we get to talk about this horrific piece of Canadian history. The residential school system lasted over a span of 125 years. Can you imagine that the last one closed down in 1996 in the province of Saskatchewan? Now, the residential school system, the American version of that, only lasted 40 years. And then the government ended it all. And that might explain why so many of our Native American friends still have been able to hang on to their traditional life. But in Canada, the whole goal was to assimilate, separate, take away from our authentic self, and turn our Indigenous people into white people. Or annihilate them completely was the goal, because they were a problem politically and otherwise. So in my humble opinion, I think there are three things that are going on here. Historically, the first thing that happened was the arrival of the Europeans. Christopher Columbus discovered America. Isn't that what we were taught in our history books? Christopher Columbus did not discover America. America was already here and inhabited by millions of Indigenous people, north and south of the American border, not to mention the Indigenous people in Mexico, which the Spanish had their way with. That's another whole show. So, European arrival. And remember, European arrival was all about the royalty, the monarchy, Spain wanting the land, France, England, all the major players wanting a piece of this newfound land. Newfoundland. No, it was old found land. As a matter of fact, the province of Newfoundland, which is, we call it the Rock out on the Atlantic Ocean, the Boatuk Nation, the Indigenous people on that island are extinct. They completely annihilated that nation, the Boatuk Nation. I hope I'm saying that properly. So the Europeans arrived. So that's the first major event that impacted our Indigenous people, the arrival of Europeans, wanting to claim this for their monarchy. And if you read back, I'm going to recommend Dr. Daniel Paul's book, We Were Not the Savages. I'm going to be interviewing him again. He wrote a book called We Were Not the Savages, because what he explained in his book was the Europeans brought their savage behaviors and punishment. And if you recall any kind of history, how cruel they were to each other, burning witches at the stake. I mean, there was lots of cruelty that had gone on. So they brought that with them. Dr. Daniel Paul's book, We Were Not the Savages, is a great resource. He knows so much. I know nothing. What I know about this, we could put in a thimble. Compared to Dr. Daniel Paul, Isabel Knockwood, and people who were in the school themselves and had the experience. So if anybody's feeling the need to phone in, I would love it. And if you attended a residential school, or perhaps you are first generation or second generation or third generation survivor, I call it. So that was the first. The second thing was, in my opinion, my humble opinion, was the massacre at Wounded Knee. And this was Sitting Bull's last stand to try and keep their firearms, keep them off reservations. The Lakota people, that day on December 29th, can you imagine how cold it would be in South Dakota? 300 men, women, and children were gunned down. So when you hear the current day news and they say, oh, there was this largest mass shooting in America, 50 people were killed in a bar, or 100 people were shot. No, the largest mass shooting in America happened in 1890. And those men, women, and children were gunned down 50 rounds every 2 minutes, or excuse me, 50 a minute, 50 shells a minute. Is what was fired by the cavalry to gun down that group of people who were walking in the dead of winter to try and stay safe. because they were resisting reservation life and they were resisting taking their firearms, which they used for hunting, etc., etc. So the arrival of Christopher Columbus, the massacre at Wounded Knee, and the implementation of the residential school system. Those three historical events changed the life of our Indigenous people forever, and the recovery has been unbelievable. How do you recover from something like that? How would you feel right now if a group of people came and apprehended your children? And I'm not talking just any people. We're talking about people in positions of authority. So police officers, agents, Indian agents. I want to cry right now. So that's just one way that they did it. One way, one aspect. And I've been in communities where I was shown, you see those caverns over there in that hill there? And I say, yes. That's where we always had a scout at the front of the community. When they saw those black cars coming up the road, that scout would come back and let us know, and we would hide our children in those caves so they wouldn't take them. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. So the residential school system was a mechanism that was set up by the government. Even John A. MacDonald, and I quote, said, we have to do something about this Indian problem. What problem? We came. We stole. There were treaties. What's a treaty? A treaty is an agreement between two nations. So in exchange for the land, we get this and this and this and this. And I'd like to clarify something here, because there is a little miscommunication about everybody's always pointing the finger. And I don't want this to be about blame. I want this to be about facts and how do we move forward and how do we get past it? But that's coming. It's coming. And there's reasons for that now, which I'll talk about. But our Canadian tax dollars do not financially support one Indigenous person in this country. Now, did you hear me say that? I'm going to say it again. Our Canadian tax dollars do not support not even one Indigenous person in this country. The money that the communities receive is money that is owed to them as part of the treaty system, where our Indigenous people are entitled to a piece of all of our natural resources. So whether that's oil or diamonds or gold or whatever, that was the agreement. And there's a lot of money that I feel, this is just my personal opinion, the thoughts expressed here are not necessarily those of the management, remember that, that money has been used for other things, has not been filtered properly. Because remember, when our Indigenous people were placed in isolated communities called reservations, they were plopped down in there with no infrastructure. There was no, that's why when you go on a reserve, there's very little or no business. And congratulations to Pelican Narrows in Saskatchewan for the recent opening of their beautiful grocery store. Can you imagine a community with 5,000 people in it that didn't have a grocery store? To shop, they either have to go an hour and a half to Flin Flon, Manitoba, or 3.5 hours to Prince Albert, Saskatchewan to shop. And that's if you have a vehicle. These are true things I'm saying. And I've been in that community. Beautiful. Peace of heaven. Beautiful. But no economic development. Well, don't you think that was on purpose? And so what created was this whole generation of entitlement and welfare, and now we're into 3, 4. I know in Nova Scotia, we're into the 5th generation of welfare. So this is not to blame anybody. This is just what happened. It's real. And you know how we panicked with the COVID-19 and we went to the stores and there was no toilet paper. Well, just imagine if there's no store even. And what about the 69 reservations in this country who have dirty water? Some of them, they can't even bath their babies in the water. And this is supposed to be a developed country. Imagine. And I'm just putting out some of the things that you may not realize in the history of how this all took place. I was shocked to find out that Indigenous people did not receive the vote until 1960, even though many of them had served overseas during World War II. How does that work? And when we go back to being children, children learn what they live. Children learn what they live. So if we grow up in a home and our dad is physically beating up our mom, then the message to us as children is it's okay for men to beat women. You see how that works? And if we grow up in a home where there's alcohol abuse, drug abuse, why wouldn't we think that that was acceptable or normal? We would. And that's not an Indigenous issue. That's a person issue everywhere across the board. But in our Indigenous communities, there are specific reasons for the intensity of the family violence, the sexual abuse, the suicides, the alcohol, the drugs, the addictions. And it all stems back to what we're talking about today. I had a client tell me that in the school where she resided, there was a homemade electric chair. And if you were caught speaking your language, you were put in that chair and punished. If you refused to get your hair cut, you were punished. If you were caught speaking your language, you were punished while you were staying in the residential school, either boarding there full time, or we have our day school kids as well. I believe it's around 150,000 to 200,000 Indigenous children who did the daytime thing, went to school, came home at night. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you all to get familiar with the facts, the history. 125 years, that's a long time. So I'm just going to read an excerpt from Isabel's book. It's a chapter called Punishment and Reward. And this is a story from a boy in, I can't believe this. I'm looking at Isabel's book here. Big Cove, New Brunswick. I didn't even see that until just now. Oh, this is meaningful. 20 years ago, I spent 2.5 years in this community, 3 days a week, working with the community members. Wow, I can't believe it. This is from Big Cove, now known as Eltsepugtug Mi'kmaq Community. So I'm just going to read it. I think that's very interesting. And those of you who know me personally know my heart and how much I enjoyed my time there. And I went to visit there last summer. I have a story about that too another time. So here I'm just quoting. I remember those horrifying years as if it were yesterday. There was one nun, Sister Gilberta. She always passed out the punishment. Every day she would take me into the bathroom and lock the door. She would then proceed to beat me 30 times on each hand, 3 times a day with a strap. She would count to 30 out loud each time she hit me. It's an awful way to learn to count to 30 in English. My older sister Grace, however, learned how to count to 50. I think there was a little humor in there. I never understood why I had to get those beatings, but at the age of 37, I realized it had to be because I spoke my language. I finally figured it out. And to this day, I cannot speak my language very well at all. I do understand when I'm spoken to, but as far as speaking it, I'm unable to. Why was our culture and language such a threat that it had to be taken away from us with such vengeance? To be taught your language with respect and kindness by your people, then to have the white man pull it from your heart with meanness and torture. Some people wonder why we are so tough, because we had to be. We had no choice. I have polio and it affected my bladder, and as a child, I wet my pants a lot. I received extra beatings for that. Once I was thrown across the dorm floor by Sister Gilberta at the age of 6, it seemed far away. I bounced off the wall at the other end of the dorm. I was sore on one side of my body for a few days after that. That's just one story. Across Canada, there were 150 schools altogether. And the government put it together and then hired the church. 3 churches were involved: the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, and the United Church of Canada, which was the church that I was brought up in. And the government hired the church to manage the schools. And 40%, only 40% of the staff, excuse me, I have to reiterate that, 40% of the staff had no professional training. They weren't real teachers. And so the quality of the education was pretty slack, wouldn't you say? And so the church were in charge, and politicians made the decisions that this was the best way to get kids away from their parents so that they can't have any impact or influence, cut their hair, feed them poorly. Oh my gosh. I did a lot of research on the food, the activities, the general state of repair of the buildings. And even with all that, you know, there are still people in our Indigenous communities who said, you know what? I know a lot of bad stuff went on there, but for me, it was in some cases better than home. But that's the very downside. That's the slim side of things. The separation anxiety, can you imagine? I had a client of mine many years ago share with me, and she was from Vancouver Island, and she shared that when they were in the school, the residential school there, they had to go to Mass every morning. And so Mass was every morning for the surrounding communities, and they would be marched down to the church. They would go in, they'd have to wait until everybody else was in the church. So they were filed in and they sat in the back row. And the only thing they ever got to see were the backs of people's necks. Imagine. And then when Mass was over, all the people in the church got up and were paraded out first. The kids were paraded out first. And then all the Mass, the other attendants at the Mass were able to get up and come out. So the kids never really actually ever got to make eye contact with anybody in the church. They were not allowed because the church served, you know, different communities around it. And she said she never understood why that was. Well, I believe a lot of that experience is happening right now with COVID. Aren't you feeling a little isolated? And we are all feeling that, not having those smiles, not having those hugs. Well, just imagine being a little kid in a residential school and not having any of that for 7 and 8 years. No wonder people would be angry and hurt. And because I know for myself, even during the pandemic, I am experiencing that isolation and I'm going, wow. And I'm someone who's connected virtually with my show and my workshops and all of that. So if you're struggling right now with pandemic and you're not allowed to go visit your grandma and you can't hug your uncle and you can't see people, that would be just a little tip of the iceberg, I think, in drawing that parallel to, not saying that's any comparison, but just imagine what it must have been like for little kids in the night, in their beds, haven't seen their parents in months, years, not allowed to hug anybody. This sounds pretty familiar right now. I'm just thinking that right now. So if anybody wants to call in, I'd love to hear from you. The number is 515-602-9660. Because what I know about this, we can put in a thimble. What our community members know about this, it's huge. So if there's anyone, and please feel free when you call in if you wish to speak your language. If you speak your language and you want to phone in and just share in your language, we'd love that. And then do a little itty-bitty translation at the end. That would be great. And if not, that's fine too. So just pick up your phone, and because this isn't over for me. I am going to talk about this and other situations that are going on in our Indigenous communities that have absolutely nothing to do with them. Imagine. And I teach my clients all the time what we're all busy recovering from our childhood. The difference in this situation is that the recovery never took place initially, and so that healing has never really taken place when it should have years ago. And you know what it's like when we're not well ourselves. We can't effectively help others or be that mentor for our kids. And so we live what we learned. And so the abuse, what happened in those schools, our Indigenous children learned how to be abusers because of the abuse that they were given. And they're not the only abusers on the planet, and they're not all abusers. I don't mean to say that. What I'm saying is that rolls downhill, and we can only live what we have learned. And then, of course, what happened to the whole concept of parenting got blown up like a big bridge because families were separated, divided, isolated. And parents didn't really get to parent anymore for like 125 years. So I guess that went out the door. And so the big thing that we need to know is that none of it was our fault. This is about government controlling a situation where they wanted to keep this all for themselves and put people away in little isolated communities and no infrastructure, no economic development, create an entitlement mentality, punishment, punishment, punishment. And today what we have is a whole generation, I believe, of young people who are going, whoa, wait a minute here. Now, when I mentioned the massacre at Wounded Knee, there was a prophecy at that time by the Hopi Nation that it would take about 7 generations for the healing from what had just happened, the arrival of the Europeans and the takeovers of the authorities and the government and all that. So there was a prophecy that it would take into the 7th generation. So if you are now between the ages of 18 and 35-ish and around there, you are in fact that 7th generation. And as we are noticing and seeing and experiencing, many of our young people in the 7th generation are rattling the cages, aren't they? Getting educated, wanting a new way of doing things, want to become entrepreneurs, want to learn traditional ways of doing things, going up to camps and learning how to kill a moose and skin it, and how to catch fish and live off the land and do all the things that are so natural. Have any of you noticed how our young people are just really, I think the time is here that they're not going to put up with too much more of these shenanigans. And so we're going to see a lot of changes in the next little while. And regulations are changing as we speak, even today as we speak. Regulations, laws, situations to support the moving forward from this horrific historical experience that took place in our country. And I think, personally, the thing that really, really I know for sure is the fact that it was like a big secret. Big secret. It was a big secret until people like Isabel Knockwood in 1992 started writing and telling stories about it. And they're not stories, they're facts. And more people, I have a friend in California, she's writing another book on missing and murdered Indigenous women. And we have Dr. Paul's book it was into his third printing in 2006. And people are coming forward doing the research. And we have a saying, you will only ever be as sick as your secrets. So I want to move into something around that. Because I am going to do another whole show on next week. I'm going to do missing and murdered Indigenous women, men, and children. That'll be our topic next week. I need help with that. Although I've had the personal experience. My first husband has been on a missing persons list since 1986. So I know how it feels. I have experience with that. We want to do a show on suicide, sexual abuse. We have to clean all this stuff up because our children are not safe if we don't. So I'm excited to see the changes and the shifts in the leadership attitudes and approaches. The residential school system is a fact. We cannot change that. But I also know if we keep looking back over our shoulders, we'll always fall down. If you're walking down the street and you're looking back, you're going to fall down. So it's okay to fall down, but it's not okay not to pick ourselves up. And we need to be able to, even though it was my European ancestors who came here, and anybody in Canada whose ancestors came from a European country, that wasn't our fault either. We're not responsible for what our ancestors did or did not do. But we are responsible to educate ourselves, find out ways that we can become part of the solution. And then there are those with mixed blood. And we need to step forward and support everything and anything to put this thing to bed and to rest so that our young people have a life, they have a future, they have an understanding that this wasn't their fault either. Because when we're busy punishing our children for something that happened to us, that's unfair. They didn't ask to be born. They didn't ask to be punished. They didn't ask for any of that. And I believe that other systems have replaced the residential school system. I could get into trouble for saying this, but heck, I've been in trouble lots of times. I don't care. But other systems that are our welfare system, our foster care system. My gosh, I read another statistic today where 86%, I believe, of our missing, I'll be talking about this next week, our missing and murdered Indigenous women were in foster care at the time they were abducted. Whoa. Or they had come out of the foster care system. They were part of the foster care. 88, it's huge. It's an astronomical statistic. So I just want to end with some words of encouragement. I know you're listening out there. It's okay if we didn't call in, but we need to use my safe space right here every Thursday to talk about what's going on. It can be great stuff. It can be negative stuff. It can be, you know what? We can do it. We can handle it. Look what I always tell people, don't worry about the healing aspect. And people say, well, I don't want to go there. Lori, I don't want to go there. It's too sad. And I always say, listen, you know what? Just do the sadness, feel the feelings, and give yourself permission to get past it. Because you've already done the hard time. If you've been, you know, I had a client, he'd been in treatment seven times. So I'm thinking, does that work really? I suppose on some level. The pain of the healing is just like teeny tiny compared to the pain that we've all endured trying to recover from what has happened to us as children. So the first step is to recognize that it's okay to let it go. It's okay to get better. It's okay to deal with my stuff. There's lots of help out there. There's lots of people out there who will help us to do that. And just face that and get her done. Because if I'm not well, if I'm home, drunk, sitting on the couch, eating chips. I have a girlfriend that does this and watching Jerry Springer. How can I help my children? And I just shared last night, I started a new ladies group and I said to my clients, well, you know what? Your moms, single moms. And if we don't take care of ourselves, who is going to take care of our children? So it's okay to take time out. It's okay to be happy. It's okay to want something more for your children and for yourself. And there's lots of single dads out there too. I know that. Doing a good job, doing a great job. So I'm just so appreciative to be here today and I appreciate all of you. And I want to tell you how much I really am so grateful for the sharing today. We're probably up to 5.4K people who've been contacted. And that's because I put it out to some of my contacts and then they shared. And I'm just really over the roof. Because you know what that says? What does that say? This is important. What we're doing here right now, even if you're just listening and maybe writing down a few things, and I don't have anything that we don't already know, maybe, but as I say to my clients all the time, I'm just here to remind you of what you already know and bring that stuff from the back burner. Let's put it on the front burner and let's get some action happening. And the first step to putting this whole thing behind us, the residential school system, we won't ever forget it. It will be there forever. Everything historical remains. But we have the opportunity to change the history. And we become the history makers. And we become those people who say, okay, I am the product of the residential school system, whether it is first generation, second generation. And here's what I did with my journey. Here's what I decided to do. And one of the testimonials that I read, a woman had gone to residential school, spent 8 or 9 years there, and then decided to go get her education, realizing that 40% of the staff had no professional training, and she went back into the residential school system as a teacher, just to make sure that the kids at least had a professional working with them. So there's a situation where somebody took their experience and turned it around and gave back. And we can all do that. We are all capable of that. So what do you want to do? Knowing that now this is out of the closet. This is out there. And movies like Indian Horse, and there's lots of YouTube information. Go to YouTube and just Google or residential school system and you'll see. Because it's not a secret anymore. And it's out there. And we know about it. And so now that we know about it, we can do something about it. Isn't it amazing? If I don't know that something's going on, or I don't know what's happening in my kid's life, or I don't know what my mom might be going through, how can I support them if I don't know? So now we know. Isn't that cool? I'm excited about that. And I hope you're excited about it too, because this is in honor of all the kids who lost their lives. I think it was something like 6,000 kids died while they were in residential school. 6,000. Can you imagine? And I could be wrong on that. If somebody wants to correct me on that, please do. Or anything else that I shared, message me, the Lori Davis Show Facebook page. I would love it if you all decided to join the Lori Davis Show Facebook page, because that's where we do all the updates on the shows and the links and all of that. So if you're listening today and you're not a member, please get in touch with us on Facebook, the Lori Davis Show Facebook page, L-A-U-R-I-E, and click in and we'll welcome you more than ever. And tomorrow's show, 4 o'clock, I'm on the air every day at 4 o'clock. Grateful to Blog Talk Radio and for this format and this technology. I'm broadcasting to you from my home in a very small community of Buck Lake, Alberta, Canada, the Great Northwest. I'm in a community of about 250 people, and the Rocky Mountains are just over the hill. So we're in mountain country. We're in hillbilly country, they call it, and redneck country. So I'm in my little studio in my home. Isn't this amazing that we can do this? I've been virtual for 13 years and have been on the air on and off radio for about 23 years. And a lot of that time I spent on reserve radio stations, doing shows on reserve. So it's been a nice journey for me. But tomorrow, Fun Friday, I'm either going to interview or have co-host celebrity, authors, and experts. And we have tons of those people in our Indigenous community as well. So tomorrow, though, my guest is a gentleman by the name of Prince Fleet Easton. He's from Palm Springs, California. He's a senior, and he's a singer, actor. And we're going to talk about what does it take to be a celebrity. Wouldn't we love to know some of the things we have to do in order to become a celebrity? So if you have a special gift or a talent, you're musical, and you want to hear more about how to get there, tomorrow's show is all about that. Thank you for listening. I'm Lori Davis. You've been listening to The Lori Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio. And message us and let us know how you felt about the show. Bye for now.